Oh, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I am Eric.
And I am Dennis.
And that's Dennis Howland. He's one of the employee owners at Tab. Comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Yes, we had a couple weekends off during the summer, and now we are back. And oh my goodness.
Wow.
We go away for 1 week, and everything goes to...
Yeah, the whole computer world explodes.
Yes. It broke the planet, otherwise known as IT. And so we're happy to be here. And just this is just kind of a just to set the mood for the show. And this was actually I plan to play this video and for a different reason. To set the mood for the show, we're going to play a commercial from Microsoft that was running in the early 90s, mid 90s.
Oh,
and take a listen. Oh, Carolyn, you there? Oh, there she is.
How much do you think this advanced operating environment is worth? Wait just 1 minute before you answer. Watch as Windows integrates Lotus 1-2-3 with Miami Vice. Now we can take this Ferrari and paste it right into Windows Write. Now how much do you think Microsoft Windows is worth? Don't answer. Wait until you see Windows Write and Windows Paint and to listen to what else you get at no extra charge. The MS-DOS executive, an appointment calendar, a card file, a notepad, a clock, a control panel, a terminal, a principal, or a RAM driver. And can you believe it? Reversi! That's right! All these features in Reversi, all for just... How much did you guess? 500? 1,000? Even more? No, it's just $99. That's right. It's $99. It's an incredible value, but it's true. It's Windows from Microsoft. Order today. P.O. Box 286. DOS. Except in Nebraska.
So, that guy's a billionaire. number one. Listen to that kook. That's Steve...
That's Steve Ballmer. Yeah, he was president of Microsoft for a while.
It's like
long time.
It's like he's selling a used car.
Well,
that's running the planet. That guy sold us the thing that's running the planet that just got broke yesterday
by a different company.
Yep,
but it got broke.
Yeah, but somehow that guy marketed Windows to the point that he made. It was practically free. When we were involved early in the early 90s here with operating systems, we were selling what's called OS 2.
Oh, that IBM. Was very cool.
And very expensive.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And yes. Imagine what we could have been, Dennis, because nobody ever got fired for recommending IBM.
True.
But we somehow ended up with that guy selling us Windows. And
here's
what we got.
Instead of OS 2.
And I think if OS 2 had won out and that guy didn't somehow convince all of us to buy some cheap operating system, we would definitely be in a different place on Friday.
Oh, absolutely. No question. But when I listened to that, I was thinking that that's almost a parody.
I know. That's why it was so funny. That's real.
It was a genuine commercial.
Yeah. The guy sounds like a lunatic.
Yeah.
And we bought it. The thing is that we bought it.
Yeah, we bought it and we kept buying it.
Yeah.
We kept buying each iteration of Windows as it came out.
And if you ask me, way back when, to listen to that guy and say, just so you know, Eric, your entire career is going to be based on that guy's operating system. The future of the planet. The future of the planet is based on that guy's operating system. I would have said you're crazy.
Yeah.
You would have thought I'm a lunatic, right?
Absolutely.
Here's where we are. We're the folks. So. We also are going to have a special guest on our program, David Palmbach from CISA. He's the local federal cybersecurity agent here in Connecticut. And that we scheduled this weeks and weeks ago.
At least a couple weeks ago that I know about. So.
It's perfect timing to see what CISA has to say about what happened on Friday. So Dennis and I are going to, of course, get into what happened on Friday.
Yes, of course.
So everything went down.
Yep. Whole internet down.
Everything.
Bang.
Everything.
Hit the floor and crashed.
I mean, planes couldn't fly. Payment systems didn't work. Hospitals were impacted. Ambulance systems. I think there was a whole
Banks.
Town in Oregon that set a state of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All thanks to CrowdStrike. And thanks to Microsoft, but we'll thank CrowdStrike first, primarily.
Yeah, and yesterday I was getting a lot of people asking me, what's CrowdStrike?
Yeah.
Well, what is it? What are they talking about? It's a antivirus and MDR product.
$80 billion company.
Yeah. It's about, what, I want to say between 10 and 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They have been around.
Yeah.
They used to have a good reputation.
Yeah, we're
rethinking that now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But they used to make that product, and another question that I was getting was, not only what is CrowdStrike, but why do so many different businesses and government agencies have this product on their computers?
Right.
And it's because there are, when you look at the package of features,
mm-hmm.
there really are not that many companies that sell anything that's comparable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you talk about just antivirus, there's at least a couple dozen companies that I can think of.
Yeah.
And then probably a couple dozen more that I don't know about.
Right.
But when you talk about antivirus plus MDR, mm-hmm. there's only really, what, four or five players in that industry?
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
And
one,
that's it.
And maybe one less now. We'll see.
So, yes, by definition, this is going to be widely deployed. And because of what it does.
Right. And what does it do? Well, of course, it protects you from Microsoft.
Correct.
Again, think back to the last thing I played for you. It protects you from that guy who sold you that $99 operating system, whatever price he was selling it to you for,
mm-hmm.
Because it's so vulnerable, because Microsoft didn't start building the operating system based on security. They based it on ease of use.
Right.
And only recently have they been held to the fire, literally recently, that they have to start building it based on security. So CrowdStrike is a commonly used tool. And what did CrowdStrike do? Well, at 2 a.m, some ding-a-ling over there released an update.
Right.
They do it all the time, right?
Uh-huh.
An innocuous little global update and hits everything real fast because we have the globally interconnected cloud here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you think about the butterfly effect. When you do an update, everybody gets it. It's like, you know, definition of butterfly effect. And everyone got impacted. You get a blue screen of death.
Right.
Blue screens of death have been kind of uncommon lately. Haven't seen them in a while.
Yeah. The last time there was a rash of them was maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it only affected certain printer drivers.
Right.
But this one is much bigger.
Brought down systems all over the place. Whoever used CrowdStrike was impacted by this blue screen of death because it really kind of gets in the nitty gritty of that operating system.
Well, yeah. It's a boot time virtual driver.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why we have to think about Microsoft's culpability here,
mm-hmm.
because in order to do the things that this software does, mm-hmm. it has to inject itself into the operating system, and it has to run at boot time along with the Windows kernel.
The kernel, yes. And it's not kernel Clink. He doesn't know nothing. It's at the kernel
That's
level.
Kernel as in kernel of corn. Mm-hmm. At any rate, it has to be there at the very time that Windows is booting up.
Right.
And it has to be read.
Right.
And that at that moment when this particular virtual driver is being read is when there's a memory leak or something that occurs that then causes the computer to crash in the middle of booting.
Right. Now, the explanations that I've been hearing on TV and in the news and reading, and you know, they're like, IT is complicated and this is very, you know, very complicated thing. And you hear the president of CrowdStrike saying, I'm deeply sorry. Well, thanks, buddy. You know, this is all very complicated stuff here. You know, it's not complicated. If you just loaded your updates on your production systems first.
Right.
Before you shove your cat food down our throats. You eat it.
Yes.
That's as simple as it is.
That's called quality control.
Update your systems. And you know what? You're going to say, Eric, well, we need to be super fast with our vulnerabilities and we have to get these out. You know what? I'll take 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Blow up your systems first.
Right.
Because you would have found out instantly the way the rest of us did.
That it's not
it's
good.
Junk. I mean, this is not technical. This is not anything but process.
It is.
Pure process.
This is a failure of business process. It is not a technical failure.
Right. And the fact is, you look at the warranties, the merchantability.
Oh.
You know, you look at warranties of software.
Yeah, I saw that myself. Oh, holy mackerel.
These companies have been absolving themselves of any ability to have any kind of quality product if you look at their EULAs or their terms of use. And right in CrowdStrike's terms of use, it says, this software may not do anything it says it's going to do. There's absolutely no warranty for it. Hey, don't use it for anything important like airlines or payment systems or nuclear, you know, power plants. Geez, thanks, guys. I'm glad you added that in there because it may not work. Well, clearly we just found that.
Yeah.
And they weren't even using them in the airline, in the plane, thank goodness. But there, we somehow seem to have, you know, and the owner of this company, Tab, was a programmer. So I have a soft heart for programmers. You know, I understand the pain.
So do I, because that was how I started.
Right. But it's been a few years now, guys. I'm tired of this warranty crap saying you guys can write whatever you want and have no responsibility for quality.
Right.
And so maybe there needs to be some regulation on software quality, because maybe if you did have some regulation, yes, it's going to slow down innovation. I understand that, right? Because you're going to actually have to make sure the stuff works. That's crazy talk.
Yeah.
But to keep allowing software companies to say, you want to use our product, go ahead, but it may not work when it doesn't work. And that's just got to stop. It's just got to stop. CISA was created in 2018 to help for cybersecurity. But we've had all sorts of departments out there for quality, for product quality forever.
Yes.
How can we let these guys get away with, we're going to be an $80 billion company connected to the planet, responsible for bringing IT down, and there's no warranty there, and we're deeply sorry.
Oh. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, the other thing is, since the mid-1970s, there's been a common saying in the computer industry.
Right.
It's called Weinberg's Second Law.
Mm-hmm.
If builders built buildings the way programmers wrote programs, the first woodpecker that came along would destroy civilization.
Mm.
People have known this.
Yes.
People have understood and known that typos and small mistakes and putting a line out of order or a punch card out of order in your stack way back when.
Yep.
All of those things, every programmer in the universe has been taught that those are a danger.
Yep.
And they can be in your code.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to account for that. You have to check it. You have to do quality control.
Well, you don't have to if you don't have your warranty.
Well, right. Yeah.
So that you actually segue to a great point here. So we're going to play another little video for you. It's a video, but think of it. It's audio for you to kind of give you another palate cleanser here. Go ahead, Carolyn. Why don't you kick this thing off?
Imagine if one day all the traffic lights in the world went out. There was no electricity anywhere, and the devices you rely on just suddenly stopped working. Sounds like a Hollywood movie, right? But on the evening of December 31st, 1999, the struggle was real. Fundamentalist Christians preached of an approaching apocalypse, and some people hunkered down in their basements with a surplus of food, water, and guns, convinced that the modern world would grind to a halt when the clock struck midnight. News outlets around the world had jumped on the story. The so-called Millennium Bug, a computer programming oversight, which meant original mainframes designed in the 1960s could only recognize the last two digits of the year. 1968, for example, was written simply as 68. How would computers interpret the year 2000? Would they reset to 1900 instead, sending banks, government security systems, and global infrastructure into a digital tailspin? Predictably, conspiracy theorists and sensationalist media stoked the wildest theories of what would happen. But in reality, governments had been preparing for the millennial switchover for years. Back in 98, President Bill Clinton had begun Y2K contingency planning, passing new laws and building a $40 million Y2K Problems Operations Center. U.S. businesses spent a collective $100 billion on testing and updating their systems to avoid any potential disasters. And large retailers like Walmart stocked up on necessities in the event of panic buying. So what actually happened when the clocks finally struck midnight? Well, nothing really. Everything just kept on running as it should. The problem had been solved simply by expanding the two-digit date into a four-digit date, making Y2K the biggest, most expensive anticlimax in human history. How would civilization be affected today if all the computers in the world stopped working?
So, well, we found that out.
Yeah.
We found that out. So Y2K, you know, we've literally had stickers here in the studio still from why I remember them putting them around when I had hair back 25 years ago. There's a Y2K OK sticker still on speakers in here and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure there's stuff in Carolyn back there in the control room, Y2K OK. So that was just to protect the planet from falling apart, they were telling us, over a two-digit error in programming, right? It was a huge deal. The media, I mean, was just frenzied with it constantly. Are you Y2K okay? Is everything Y2K okay? My wife's like, Eric, is everything going to stop? I'm like, no, it's a lot of baloney.
Yeah.
Tab made a lot of money helping people become Y2K. We had to check all of our client systems to make sure they were Y2K okay. I mean,
right.
No matter how I tried to be pragmatic about it, I said, you're probably fine. They still paid us to make sure they were. Fast forward 25 years. 25 years later.
Yeah.
And Friday was exactly what we were promising you with Y2K.
Right.
We stink. This industry is awful. I am embarrassed to be a part of the IT industry. It is breathtaking how awful we are at it.
Yeah.
I can't believe that's where we are 25 years later. Although, if you know me, you know exactly how I've talked about the IT industry on our program for the entire existence of this program.
Yeah.
It's not surprising to me what happened on Friday.
No, not in any way, shape, or form.
Right? But it's so disheartening, and it should. So here's the thing. When I would have told you during Y2K not to freak out, I'm telling you now you should freak out about what happened on Friday.
Yeah.
Right? You should. Why? Because so many systems, not just CrowdStrike. There are so many software packages. We've got stacks of technology protecting everybody from Windows. This is what we've done. We have stacked security on top of application on top of what have you to protect you from that ding-dong bomber who was selling you that product for $99 to protect you from this thing. We're interconnected through the cloud because somebody at some cocktail party said the cloud was a good idea. We're all connected, so one bonehead company who does not care about quality, who won't run the update on their own stuff first, to break their stuff first, will happily run it on the planet. CrowdStrike is just one of many companies that can do this to us.
Yes.
And when you find Putin talking about how they were insulated of this issue because they've been sanctioned so much that they use their own stuff now, you're almost it's almost laughable where we are here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like the cherry on top of the cake or whatever. It's ridiculous. Where have we come in 25 years that we don't understand quality anymore? We don't have people that actually run businesses that care. How do you, again, this is not complicated. This issue is not some ITO, you don't understand it person here. We can't explain to you the complexities of IT. No, buddy. You do the update on a lab first. You break those systems first. Oh, it didn't break. Then we can release it.
Right.
It's the basics of programming. You get an alpha, you get a beta, you release it.
Yes. And I mean, I'm not much of a programmer anymore, but even I understood that. You always operate out of a test bed first.
Right.
And apparently they didn't do that. And are you surprised? If you've watched the tech media over the past, year or two, what do you see? You see stories about layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft laid off 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Facebook laid off 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever laid off and laid off and laid off and laid off and laid off.
Right.
Who do you think got the axe first?
Yeah, the quality people.
People in the quality control.
Right.
Because quality control costs these companies money.
Right.
But there is no direct return for that.
Mm-mm.
So they consider it a cost center that provides nothing. And when they want to fix the books and make everything look better for the stockholders, what do? They cut the cost centers.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they've done.
Right. Now, we used to blame the bankers, right? We used to blame the bankers for bringing down society. They've been doing it since the beginning of time. SNL debacle, right? 2008, Great Recession. All banker-driven. All driven by selling people junk and garbage. Sorry, bankers, but you know it's true. And so then what do we got to do? We got to run stress tests on your banks because people like Silicon Valley Bank don't understand how interest works and don't understand how you got to keep enough money in the bank. And then you run a stress test to make sure you don't have a run in the bank and then the whole financial system doesn't collapse. Well, you know, it's time to run some stress tests on IT.
Yeah.
There needs to, this is ridiculous. We have, this should scare the crap out of you. I'm sorry. What just happened is just, but a, you see these politicians say, we have to work on resiliency. Are you kidding me? We're way past that, man. You're one ding-a-ling releasing one update from bringing the entire planet down again.
Right. Resiliency can't even be in the conversation yet because we haven't reached the point where we can even discuss how to achieve it.
And we
have many more baby steps to go before we get there.
And this is all at scale. The issue is you had hundreds of thousands of physical computers, virtual computers that were all impacted by this stupid update. And the key was you had to get past the blue screen of death into safe mode, pull out a file, but you had to do that at scale.
Right.
They're all down. You had to touch them all.
And yes, that's the problem with the fix.
Right.
The fix is either a physical fix of the computer itself, assuming you can do that.
Right.
Or you have to tamper with a virtual machine somehow and alter its files.
We'll talk a little bit about that too coming back. Well, we know we got some calls on the line. Frank, Ben, Joe, Chuck. We'll get to your calls too, but we had to address this. And again, I'm not an alarm. I try not to be an alarmist. But if you guys have listened to this program, you know my feeling on IT. I came out of UConn as a business major, getting into the new world of technology and IT. And then what hits me 3 or 4 years after I get out of UConn? Y2K. And the president of the company says, yeah, Eric, we didn't think we're going to need 4 digits in the date. You know, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is my future. Clearly it is. So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Stick around, too, because David Palmbach from the from CISA will be coming in, and we're going to talk about all the great things CIS is doing to protect us from cybersecurity, but we'll also talk about what the heck happened on Friday and maybe what kind of laws we need to hold these people accountable. We'll be right back. All right, and we're back, and we do thank GoNetSpeed for that very much. Does give us a lot more time and to get more into nitty-gritty of these things. So before we get to your calls, we do want to kind of talk about recovery, right? So when this thing hit, it's thousands and thousands of workstations and servers and the Azure cloud were impacted, and of course, being IT people, we go to see what the fix is, and you got to remove this file, right?
Right.
Well, there's another fix, too, that Microsoft was touting if you had a virtual system.
Well, yeah, and this is a virtual system on their cloud, Azure cloud, where you can't manipulate it.
Right.
Even on a virtual server that you own, you would be able to manipulate the virtual hard drive file and then remove the file that's bad from it, and then you can boot.
Right.
But when your virtual machine is on Azure servers, you don't have access to that.
Right. So, of course, here's the solution. They said to reboot. All right. They said to reboot.
Okay.
And so they said to reboot not one time.
Okay.
Not two times.
Two.
Not four times.
Not four?
No. Not eight.
Not eight?
Not eight times. Not 10.
No?
No. 15 times.
15?
They actually...
Where does that number even come from?
It's a serious post from Microsoft. They said, if you need to fix your blue screen of death Azure virtual server, you can reboot it 15 times. So, when I was a kid and our lawnmower didn't work, I would kick it. I'd kick it one time, and then I'd pull, and it wouldn't work. I'd kick it two times, and I'd pull, and it wouldn't work. And I'd kick it three times. Oh, magically, it worked. So Microsoft is using the kick it approach, and some ding-a-ling at Microsoft is rebooting servers. All right, Bob, can you go over there and reboot that server and just figure out how many times it's going to take? It literally reminded me of the Colon Blow commercial. Like, how many boxes of colon, you know, your box of cereal matches to one box of Colon Blow. This is it. 15 times you had to reboot that Azure server. And somebody seriously wrote that. Now, if you've got one server, fine. You're going to reboot it 15 times. But all this is at scale. This is in the cloud. Somebody said the cloud was a good idea. So you don't just have one server impacted. You have hundreds. You got, and you know how long it takes to reboot a server? That's not healthy?
Oh, a long time.
So the fact that this guy sat there, I mean, you just picture this guy, right? And they rebooted it, and like, all right, one, let's see what happens. Go get a cup of coffee, come back. Oh, no, that didn't work. Two, play a little Sudoku on my phone. I mean, this is IT. 25 years later from Y2K.
I can't.
We have got to be embarrassed. This is awful. Where have we come? And again, you listen to Steve Ballmer in that commercial. He's the guy that sold us this garbage.
Yeah.
Right? 15 times with a straight face on a resolution site of Microsoft is how many times you have to reboot your we call it borked server. So, welcome to the modern age. I don't know what to tell you guys. This is where we are. This is where we've come. So that's enough, I guess, about CrowdStrike this morning so far. I'm sure you guys are going to have questions. Oh. But let's get to your calls. We'll also talk to David Palmbach about it. But we're going to go to who's been on the longest. Frank. We're going to go to Frank here out there in Portland. Hey, Frank, what can we do for you?
Good morning. You guys have a great show. Thank you for the service that you provide.
Our pleasure.
Just got a Chromebook, an Acer Chromebook.
Yeah.
And to use just for managing finances. And when it was delivered, I noticed on the box it was made in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is from a security point of view, should I be concerned about that? Or
good question. Acer is like a Taiwanese company.
Yes.
So that's been that way forever. And depending on your politics, it's either still China or not China.
Yeah.
But should you be concerned? Yes, right? I mean, I think the answer is going to be default yes. Always be concerned about whatever you're putting on your systems. But it doesn't mean, though, that you can't run securely on the Chromebook, even though it's manufactured wherever it's manufactured.
Okay. Yeah, that was what I was looking for.
Yeah.
So basically the security with the Chromebook software and so forth, mm-hmm. and their security plus the security with your financial institution and two-factor authentication and so forth,
right.
You can feel pretty confident about that.
Generally. Again, my confidence is really rattled thanks to Friday. So, I mean, if you asked me this and Friday hadn't happened, I'd be a little more like, yeah, you should be good. I don't know anymore, man. Yeah. Yes, generally you should be quote-unquote confident, but is confident in IT for crying out loud? I don't know anymore. Run your encryption, you know. Don't run anything else. Don't surf the internet on that thing while you're doing things on your financial software.
And when you do communicate with your bank, mm-hmm. You're going to have a TOS or secure connection to it.
Yes.
And that alone should give you, I'm not going to say that it's unassailable,
but
even if there's something on that Chromebook running that the Chinese Communist Party planted there, the chances of them actually reading those packets is pretty much nil.
Right.
So
more than likely, the only thing they'd put on there is some sort of crypto, cryptocurrency program is going to run in the background and generate
that.
Bitcoin.
Actually, that would be more of my worry, actually.
Yeah.
Just that there's either crypto software on it or adware.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. Things like that might
be an issue. You're probably fine.
Yeah, you're probably okay.
Yeah, what would adware do?
Well, it would present ads to you, you know, as you're browsing.
Right.
But the adware software itself is consuming cycles while it watches what you're doing in order to figure out what ads to throw at you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and it actually will occupy a little bit of internet traffic too, which is going to slow down your connection a little.
Yeah.
A little, but not a lot.
You're probably fine, Frank.
Okay. You're probably okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if any other brand would be something to go to. However, I went up to Best Buy and just looked at the machines. And the only way I could really tell is just actually looking at the machine to see where it was made.
They're all made in China.
They're all, everything is made in China.
Yeah,
exactly.
We've given that up long ago.
But going through another company like HP, for instance, would that...
same manufacturer.
They're U.S. based.
They're made in China.
Yeah, they're made in China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, you've answered my question. Thank
you. Frank. Thank you.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. You too.
Bye-bye.
Made in China. Let's go to Ben next. What's happening there, Ben?
Hey.
Hey.
I was having a problem with the internet last week, so I called Frontier. I was talking with the person on the phone, and mm-hmm. she had to sell me something. Actually, she tapped me into a free trial of a product called Eero Secure. Apparently, it goes with the Eero router.
Oh, brother. Okay, so they sold you a software package to go with the Eero system they gave you?
Well, I guess it's a 3-month free trial of this Eero Secure product. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about that, whether it's worth it. After the 3-month free trial, it would be $5 per month.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if that would be...
Well, I mean, the internet companies are looking for any way they can to sell you something because they're just a dumb pipe to the internet.
Yep.
And if they can add some sort of security tools or features they're going to add to their revenue, they're going to try to sell to you. What was it supposed to solve for you, Ben? Or was it just an afterthought? Oh, by the way, Ben, after I fix your problem, I want to sell you this tool. Was it going to solve something for you, or was it just they sold it to you while you were while she was helping you?
It was more so I had no internet access, and it turned out to be a problem with the ONT.
Mm-hmm.
That I guess it's an optical network terminal, I think. And, mm-hmm. But this is not really anything related to the product that they're...
So the internet was down. It was their problem, and they then leveraged the call to sell you something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I would tell you, no, it's not necessary. So we recommend OpenDNS, and it's free. And it gives you that security that they just sold you for $5 a month.
Okay. Yeah.
Or you can pay them. It doesn't matter to me. But I mean, you don't need to. I find it incredulous that they would, as your internet's down, they sell you something at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you don't need it. You can use the free... OpenDNS, it's a good method of security, and I would tell you that's what I use. I'm using the same things I would tell you to use. Yeah.
I'm looking at Frontier's own page about this product,
mm-hmm.
and it is web filtering.
Yeah,
family monitoring.
Yeah,
and one feature that it has is what they call internet backup, which is basically a failover option. I would think to cellular if their connection fails, if Frontier's does.
Right, right. They would have to sell you a connection to that, though.
Well, I think it's included, but I mean, there aren't any details here.
Yeah,
it's just that they say that it's part of their Eero Secure.
Gotcha.
So that is something
maybe
that might be a feature you want, but then again, you might have hotspot capability through your cellular provider already, and you could just use that, and maybe you don't even need that feature. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But we just recommend OpenDNS for filtering and content management.
Okay.
All right, Ben.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
All right, great. Our pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I mean... to sell you something while you're on there with a problem.
Oh, and Mike G gave us a little input.
Yeah.
He's he's got some experience with it. He says it doesn't do a lot, and you can't have Eero secure and open DNS at the same time. It conflicts.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
All right. Now, who else is going on here? We've got Joe in Berlin has been on the longest. What's happening, Joe?
Good morning.
Morning.
I talked to you the last live show.
Mm-hmm.
I had the problem with connecting or getting Excel. And so you posted some instructions to correct that.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I followed that.
Uh-oh.
And
did it work?
It said to reinstall Office 19.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I did that.
All right.
And it messed up Outlook.
Oh.
I got a 5-year-old PST file. I lost my current one.
You lost your current PST?
How would you lose the PST because you did a repair on Office?
Yeah, that shouldn't be the case.
Office repairs don't touch the PSTs.
Mm-mm.
Well,
I've done thousands of them, and I know that it doesn't do it. So I don't know how that would have happened to you.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I got, and I've been looking around trying to find a newer PST file, you know, in a different folder.
Yeah.
And I can't find it.
That is so we should always preface anything you do on your computer and make sure it's backed up.
Backup. No.
Yeah.
I can't find it.
Well, there is a very quick shorthand way to find any file on a computer.
There you go.
You open up a command prompt in admin as an admin. Okay. And in that command prompt, you're going to type CD space / to get to the root of the C drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next command is going to be DIR, dog, India,
Robert,
space / S as in Sam, space *.pst. Hit enter and wait.
Yeah.
It will list every single PST file anywhere on your C drive.
Okay. The old DOS command.
Yes. It's an old DOS command. If you're familiar with DOS, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I recommend running it in a command prompt as admin.
Right.
Because that will give you complete access to everything on that drive. If you run it only in your own user profile, it will only be able to read what's in your user profile, and it won't be able to get to any other user profiles that you might have had.
Is there can you put a link or something to do that?
Oh, that command?
I'll see if I can find a page that describes that method. I don't remember ever seeing one, but we'll find it for you.
Hang on. It's old school, Joe.
It's very old school.
Yeah. Because what it was is I've been looking through different, do the file directory.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, whenever I tried to do, control panel.
Oh, good grief. I found one.
Do a search to try to get to the control panel.
Yep.
I just get instructions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get to the control panel.
You might have some other issues with that machine then. But
yeah.
We'll put this link up here for you to try to find that PST. Restoring Excel should not have done anything to your PST.
Yeah, it should not.
So you might have other issues going on here.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, Joe.
Thanks.
Good luck. All right, you're welcome. All right, I'm going to move on now to... Let's pop over to Jeff in Middletown. Hey, Jeff.
Good morning. How goes it, guys?
Good. How are you, sir?
All right. I want to talk to you a little bit and ask you a couple of questions about the in the news CrowdStrike Microsoft issue.
Yeah.
All right. I got bit by that at work. My machine is now turned into a boat anchor, basically.
Yep.
Well, here's what I tried to do this, and I couldn't get around it. I'm guessing that it's probably because CrowdStrike is prohibiting it. I want to bring it up in safe mode of networking so that I can, get the new fixed code and be all set, but it won't let me do it.
Okay.
Is that a thing? I might just do something wrong.
Well, okay, I have a friend.
Yeah.
Who's in the same boat that you are.
Oh.
Okay. In her case, BitLocker was enabled on the drive.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
And you can't get into safe mode at all with networking or without unless you have the BitLocker key, and she does not have it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Oh.
All right. So that's where you are. You're dead in the water then until your IT department can get you that BitLocker recovery key.
Well, I don't know if that's what my IT department is talking of doing. And they were scrambling around yesterday, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Their solution to this is going to be everybody's machine needs to be re-imaged.
Yep. That's a drastic approach. Yep.
I believe that.
Yeah, it's a scorched earth approach. It'll work, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like swatting a fly with a brick, you know.
Well, no, see, the problem, Jeff, is that's how IT has been developed.
Right.
I was just talking to you about kicking the lawnmower. We will swat flies with bricks. That's how stupid we have become. We have not designed these systems properly, clearly.
Right.
And nobody thinks about scale and thousands of systems hit at the same time. So this wipe and reload, if I had a quarter for every time I have said the word wipe and reload in my entire career, I would be driving a much nicer car.
Same
well,
here.
Here's my big question, too, is why did CrowdStrike test this before they put it out? And
I
know the answer to this one. I know they didn't, but I know the answer to this one, too, is my IT department didn't test it internally before they pushed it out.
They couldn't.
They did not have an opportunity to.
So those days are gone because of the cloud.
They were hit at the exact same time that you were.
Right.
So they had no opportunity to pretest this.
And in the old days, again, when both Dennis and I had hair, you would not allow updates on your systems until you tested them maybe in a sandbox system. Right. But now because we're all interconnected and the cloud is a great idea and we're all supposed to be working beautifully, harmoniously and kumbaya, baloney. We are literally a ding-a-lings update away from literally paper and pencil. And do you have any cash?
You know, trust me, I'm an old fat guy. I've been around IT for a long time. And I remember the days of sandboxes when, you know, we thought, you know, your Novell Network 3.12.
Oh.
No. Some new stuff came in. What do? You hit the sandbox with it and, you know, make sure it works before you deploy that to, you know, 200 files.
Yeah. And this is where we are. They didn't test it. They don't test it. They're not required to test it. They have no warranty. They're not required to have a warranty. Pay me now. And so the IT departments are we're at the mercy of these things. And the IT departments put this thing in to protect you from Microsoft. So
you know what the sad thing is? I found out the difference between the folks who got hit by this and those who didn't was whether their machine was on or off.
Well, yeah, if the machine's not on, it's not going to get the update. So the IT department would tell you, keep your machine off because there's a problem. So that'll protect you. So, again, you're back to paper and pencil to get anything done. You're just putting your feet up and you have your computer works, but you can't use it. But, yeah, if you didn't get the update. But the problem is the technology is designed to send the update out to everybody. I remember this happened to WebRoot. We used to recommend WebRoot.
Right.
WebRoot was an antivirus program, and I remember Matt Lauer, before he got the axe, I remember him saying in some morning, because I used to watch the Today Show, and he's sitting there saying, WebRoot. I mean, we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of instances out there for our customers, saw Microsoft as a threat. Now, I would agree with WebRoot, but in this case, it actually attacked the operating system and brought down hundreds of thousands of systems as it started to sweep across the planet as it updated. I almost spit my coffee out because now I knew my day was ruined because it was going to be impacting a lot of my clients. This goes back probably half a decade ago. I was actually trying to find that clip of Matt Lauer saying it. We still haven't learned, man. I think we're worse.
No, apparently not.
Yeah, we're worse. So, yeah, you're kind of stuck. I think you're going to have to wipe and reload. You're going to have to take a brick to it. Like,
I'm on the list. I'm on the list for a re-image. I just thought if there was some slick way to get into safe boot networking.
No.
If the drive is BitLockered, then it doesn't matter whether you can get into safe mode or not. You're not going to be able to do it.
Right.
Without that recovery key.
Yeah. Sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, it happens. Thanks for your time. Appreciate you guys.
You're welcome. And the fact that you thought there was a slick way, rethink yourself there. This is the problem with IT. It's, if there was a slick way, we wouldn't have these problems in the first place. We wouldn't be so bad. Right? I mean, the fact that you think there's a slick way is part of the problem. Yeah. You know, we have...
Here's what I mean by that. Do you remember a DOS command called fdisk?
Yes.
Yes.
Flag on it, /MBR?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Well, yeah. When I was doing support work on, you know, old DOS machines, I used to put that into everybody's auto exec. So...
Wow.
If you get some kind of a boot, you know, boot sector infection.
Yeah.
Monkey A, Monkey B, it'll just automatically take care of it.
You're blasting in every boot up.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What's that?
You were blasting that problem, the potential problem, every time it booted.
Correct.
Yeah. That was a pretty slick way to do it. You're right. But that's old school, and that was back down to DOS.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, like a bare metal solution to this.
No. We've gone way past that. We are down into Looney Tunes land now with this stuff. So... I'm sorry, you're going to now have to thank IT, thank it, for not letting you be productive, not letting you fly a plane, not letting you pay for a coffee, not letting you, you name what happened on the list of things that happened on Friday. The list was so long on Yahoo Finance, my finger got tired scrolling as to all the things that were impacted by this thing. You know, we have not progressed in 25 years. We have just attained Y2K.
I get paid either way, so, you know.
Yeah, well, that works for you, man. So, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the call.
Yes, sir. Take care. Thank you.
You're welcome. I wish we could have helped him, but no. When you have that encrypted, why do we have to encrypt everything? We got to encrypt it to protect it from access from bad guys getting into Microsoft.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It's just ridiculous is where we are. And once it's encrypted, you can't go and find that file because you can't get it up, boot up to change out that silly file. So they're going to have to wipe and reload. Why did they lose the key? The encryption key is a mile long.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not. Yeah. And even if you have it, you must physically type it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that a couple of times with computers.
Yeah,
and I can tell you, almost never do I get it right on the first try.
Right. You feel like that never. Guy who rebooted the Azure server 15 times.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a problem at scale in that you have to touch every system.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. And the guy says he's deeply sorry. I can't think of his name, the CEO of CrowdStrike.
You know George Kurtz.
Yeah, you're good with the names. George, you stink, man. You know what Elon did? First thing he said. He pulled CrowdStrike off of every system at X or all his companies. That's the right answer, right?
Right.
When a company does this, you don't tank the stock 20%. You tank that stock. I mean, they earned it.
You drop the value to pennies.
It's amazing.
On the share.
But no, even the stock barely moved. It's like, oh, well, you know, they brought the planet down for a day, but we'll give them another shot. That's another problem. I mean... Because they have no warranty on their product, I mean, who are you going to sue?
They're going to get sued anyway, trust me.
The only people who are going to make money there are the attorneys.
Right.
The rest of us are all waiting for the next time it happens. So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. We are expecting David Palmbach to come in from CISA. And again, we scheduled this many weeks in advance, so the timing on this couldn't be any better to see what CISA might be saying about this, if there is any stance. Maybe there's not. I'm not going to hold them too much. Just going to have a nice chat about what CISA's out there trying to do to protect us, you know, from cybersecurity incidents. But this was just pure
This is a
stupidity.
Cybersecurity product that became a cybersecurity incident.
Yeah.
Woo!
Can't make it up. You know. Did they test it?
No.
So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Stick around. We'll be right back.